Come on and get it, honey, while the getting's good, good, good.
Hello and welcome to Unapologetically Judith Owen. This is the podcast from Judith Owen. Hi, Judith Owen.
Hello, BB.
And me, BB Lynch. Now, Judith, I'm not suggesting I'm obsessed with you or even a little in love. I mean, let's let the lawyers decide. But I have been watching, reading, listening to all your interviews about your latest incredible album, Come On and Get It. And what comes across loud and clear is the album is, yes, of course, a beautiful homage to and a celebration of the unsung, brilliantly talented women of 40s and 50s jazz and blues. But it's also a celebration of how badass they were, their attitude, how unapologetic they were, and how powerful being unapologetic is. And that's what this series is talking about. I'm BB Lynch, and hi, Judith Owen.
Hi, I'm Judith Owen. Was that good? Because every time I hear myself back in these podcasts saying, hi, I'm Judith Owen, I sound like I'm pervy, or I sound like I don't care.
But I like both those things about you.
I don't care, pervy.
A pervy non-carer.
That's really what, on Tinder, that's what you would say, isn't it? Pervy non-carer for... needed.
with warm hands. So Judith, have you done Tinder?
Yes.
Big fan of Tinder? You a fan of Tinder?
Right. I'm a married woman. You know, I hear about Tinder from my band. I mean, I used to anyway, when they were traveling around the world and trying to hook up with people. But, you know, no, it's not my thing. I've watched the train wrecks that have occurred from every Tinder that they've had, you know, like from the, you know, the absolutely terrifyingly unstable human beings that they can't get rid of the next morning.
I'm just saying,
it's not my thing. You did apologize. But to come all the way to Italy to scare my drummer was not, I didn't need it.
You know, you know where I stand on pasta. That was always on the cards, right? Right?
Listen, I shit you not, literally was like a religious zealot hooked up with one of my tech guys. It was terrifying. I mean, terrifying. And she came with a mother. So let's just drop that right now. Do you know what I'm saying? She's just sort of like, suddenly it's like, we're dating. And who's this then?
It's my mother.
It's my mother. And she's kind of hot too, don't you think?
Gosh, like, that was an interesting sandwich being offered. I won't do that.
I mean, I had nothing to do with this, but I have to have all the details afterwards because I live vicariously.
I'll give you some details. Yeah. I went on a date and it was a first date with a bloke. I never saw him again. He didn't look anything like his photos. Wasn't that interesting, God bless him. And then chat. I left quite soon, got the train home. And on the train, he sent me a message and the message said, please tell me you do have pubic hair.
What?
So the wedding's June. I really hope you're free. Isn't he?
He's a keeper.
Anyway,
that's a keeper.
In this series, I've written. What?
I'm stunned. You've just stunned me. It's only 8:30 in the morning. I'm literally like, what? That's another conversation, by the way, altogether. The to have or to have not pubic hair. It's just crazy. It's a crazy.
I'll tell you
thing.
What it is. Anyway, it's certainly. I'll tell you what it isn't. It's certainly not a conversation to have on the first text after a first date. That didn't even go that well.
No, you'd expect, you know, silence if it didn't go that well. And maybe like, thanks so much. Okay, it was fun, but you know, whatever. Nice to meet you, but do you have pubic hair?
Anyway, like I said, June wedding. So Judith, oh my God, I have been loving this series and we're getting near to the end and I'm not happy about that. So I'm going to ignore that because that's going to make me sad. And what I am going to do is in this series, right, we've had the joy of listening and discussing our unapologetic goddesses, right? The ones you celebrate in your album, Come On and Get It. And that they were who they were and what they did 70 years ago is extraordinary. They were just trailblazers. It blows my beautiful freckly mind. But we have unapologetic women now too, don't we? You and I have talked about women that inspire you now. And that's what I thought would be really good to chat about today.
Yeah, I have become, you know, I live very predominantly in a male world because it's a music world and still it's predominantly male. I mean, anybody that's in it knows this, but women are becoming, in my business, women are becoming so much more supportive of each other. And in the entertainment business, women are becoming so much supportive of each other. And outside of the entertainment industry, I'm meeting women all the time who blow me away. Because they're so pro-women. They are so empowered and unapologetic in everything they do. I find a lot of them down here in New Orleans, I have to say. It's a very, it's kind of a matriarchal society. You know, I always remember growing up and with my Welsh family, seeing how strong the women were. I mean, they were powerful women because they were running everything. You know, they were doing, they were the homemakers, yes, but they were holding it all together. They were powerful. And that's in a man's world. But I meet people down here in New Orleans who are lawyers, women, architects, designers, chefs, you know, judges. It's extraordinary how many women I've met down here who really like doing it their way, the way they want to. They're just entrepreneurs. They're unapologetic. They're empowering other women by doing that, but also by, you know, I go out regularly here now and have like dinners that are all female because I love the idea of bringing all these women together, having these evenings where this extraordinary group of diverse women sit down and share their lives, their stories, whatever they're doing with each other. I mean, I think it's a glorious
so
thing to do.
What is it about New Orleans? Is that just a happy coincidence, or is there something about New Orleans that's attracting these women or enables women to be like this there?
It's also a matriarchal society here. The women are very strong down here. They're very, they're powerhouses. And I think that the very nature of this place is that it encourages artistry and it doesn't really take that much notice of, you know, it kind of likes eccentricity. It likes people who are unexpected and larger than life and different and articulate and eccentric, as I said, and not just eccentric, but it opens its arms and welcomes anybody who is living full out. And it doesn't take notice that much of, and it's not gender specific. That's what I like, you see. It's sort of like, it's very forgiving on every level of like, you know, it'll take everyone and anybody who's doing something interesting. It's like, yeah.
Forgiving of age?
Yeah, it is. I think it is. I mean, I'll give you an example of what I'm trying to say, and I'm not being very articulate, but I remember Harry wanted me to come up and see one of the Mardi Gras that's just happened here years ago. He wanted me to meet the judge, this friend he'd made, a judge, and the particular parade, I think it was Toth, was going past their house. So we went up and to this Mardi Gras party, and we arrived, and I remember seeing this fabulous woman in the street dancing and waving at Harry, and I thought, oh, that's cool. And she's dancing away, covered in beads, having the best time, screaming, laughing, drinking. It's the judge. And that's what I mean. It's kind of like it doesn't expect you to be one thing only. You know, it's not about labels. It's not about saying you're this, so you should be this, or you should do this, or this is the way you should behave. So here's this very high power judge who also knows how to get down and have a good time and party, because actually she's a human being and that's what she does. And she can be a powerful, strong woman, and she can have a fucking great time partying, you know, partying in Mardi Gras. It's all okay. One doesn't take from the other. One doesn't, you know, mean that she can't do the other thing or take it seriously or be a great judge or be good at her job. And I do think that an awful lot of what women have felt for decades, if not, you know, hundreds of years, is the labeling of, you know, you are female, therefore this is how you should behave. And don't get me wrong, you know, we know that in the South, here in America, women are, you know, maybe people, I think women are trying to guard this, you know, tooth and nail, because right now we're seeing a time where, you know, the Republicans, and particularly those kind of extremists, are wanting to take back ownership of women's rights and of women's
reproductive
bodies.
Reproductive rights is...
So it's even more, you know, the reproductive rights is, it's even more pertinent that women who have fought tooth and nail, as I said, to shine, to be seen, to be everything that they are capable of being, and to be on a level playing field. Now they're being threatened with going back to the 50s, basically, where it's like, get back in the corner. You don't own your own body. And that is terrifying, because once you're out, you know, once you have the freedom that you have always deserved and have fought for, it's that we're not going back in. We're not. I mean, this is craziness, but this is what is around America right now. So I find it even more wonderful to come across women, whether it be here in LA or any of the main cities, major cities that I go to find women who are absolutely inspiring. inspiring and living their authentic lives and showing themselves in the biggest way imaginable, whether they're liked or not. It doesn't matter. That's
you,
who they are.
When we were talking before about this, you were saying, oh, you have to mention Mary Howell, civil rights lawyer. Mm.
Yeah. Well, Mary Howell is one of the most impressive human beings I've ever come across in my life. If anybody has seen, listening, watched the show Tremé about New Orleans post-Katrina, then there was this character in it who was the lawyer, the female lawyer, civil rights lawyer. And that was based on Mary Howell, who is an institution as far as I'm concerned. If you can call somebody an institution, she should be canonized as far as I'm concerned. What she does is basically save lives. She basically is the person who is called to the jail when somebody's kid has been picked up by the police because they're off their meds and they have schizophrenia and they've been thrown into a thing called the crate. The crate is basically a crate that you would train a dog in, and that's to try and stop them from harming themselves and harming others. And there have been various appalling atrocities that have occurred, of course, because these people have been left in there, no food, no water, no medication. And there have been deaths, and I met a couple of parents of one of these kids recently, and it was extraordinary. But she gets these people out. She takes care of the people who don't have the money to be able to get a lawyer, to get representation, to be protected. She's the woman that goes out walking the streets with the Mardi Gras Indians, who are a very important part of this culture, to make sure that there is proper police presence, that people are being taken care of properly. She's the person that walks around and makes sure that there isn't it's a decibel issue in any way that's going to harm musicians' hearing, people's hearing. I mean, I can't tell you how many things this woman does, but ultimately she does the work that would cripple most of us. You know, when she tells me about what she's done in a day, she says to me, what did you do today? And I said, oh, I wrote a song, or, you know, I was in the studio mixing.
I upset BB Lynch.
Yeah, I upset BB Lynch again. And I said, you know, what did you do? And she went, well, these parents called me and their child had been arrested and he'd gone into juvenile court. And I spent the day trying to get him out there, trying to explain the fact that there was a medication problem. And I'm like, okay, you know.
She does the real stuff.
Or worse, you know, I had to accompany these parents as they went to, to get their child's body, God. You know, one of those. And I listen to this and think, oh my God. Oh my God. It's unfathomable. And she is the most extraordinarily life-affirming, joyful, you know, I can't even describe what she is like. She's incredible. And her relationship, I remember going to a party. I do this Christmas show with Harry. We do this Christmas show, Christmas Without Tears. And it's been, because of COVID, it's been here in New Orleans. Really nowhere else. We used to play it. You do it in London and all over America. But now we're raising money for Innocence Project New Orleans, which basically fights to get completely innocent people or wrongly convicted people, as in life, no parole for having a stick of, you know, like a joint in their pocket. Wow. Life, no parole. Because it's a business here. You know, it's a business. Like, it's all money. So people in prison are making things. It's a business. This is what it's all about in America, as we know. And I love it. Don't get me wrong. I love it. And I hate it for so many things that could be improved. But money is God, as we know. And that's what really matters. And so my friend Libra Legrone is now working there. But the first time I came across Innocence Project was at, and this is a fine example of Mary Howell. She's got a party at her home for Gary, this man, who had been in Angola prison for 47 years for basically doing nothing. He stood, but he was by a school bus. He was 16. A kid was shot. The police grabbed him. He was the easiest grab. And I'm not saying that there aren't shockingly dangerous and frightening people in prison. There are. There's rapists. There's murderers. There's, you know, there's psychopaths in there too, but that's what makes it even more painful when you know that there are absolutely innocent people in there who've had their entire lives stolen from them, either for doing nothing or for having like a gram of coke or a joint. I mean, this is insane. So Gary was in prison for 47 years, half of which was in solitary confinement. And this man mentored other young men and taught them to read and write, because we know there's a correlation between, you know, being in prison and actually not being able to read and write as well. Education being at the basis of so much of this. And he started the Shakespeare Festival, I believe, and he mentored other young people. He would never say that he was guilty, because he wasn't. And if he had, he could have come out years earlier and been paroled, but he refused because he wasn't. And finally, he's completely vindicated. He's completely cleared of everything because of the Innocence Project. Here's this party at Mary's, and I meet him, and it was like, there are a few times when you meet people that have so much grace about them that you feel humbled in their presence. And he was one of those people. He had no bitterness. He had no hatred.
How?
He only had grace.
How could you forgive that?
I know. It was very Nelson Mandela moment of my life has been taken, and yet I found a higher purpose. What I carry with me is the kind of grace that I wish I could have for 1 minute of my life. Honestly, that's what Mary Howell is all about. And I see the grace in her for that same reason, is that there's this higher calling for the greater good of human beings. I mean, I'm too selfish to do something like that. Most of us are, and self-absorbed, but her whole MO is about that.
How does one's brain and character kind of go there to make them able to do kind of jobs like that? I mean, it's not even a job, it's a vocation, isn't it? And I remember you talking about Kathy Sharp Ross, who I should say to people, she's a motivational speaker and the founder of the Reinvention Exchange site, and she's the author of a book called Reinvent Your Life. And you said something, it was one sentence, I thought, oh, this is really good. You said her mother told her she was enough.
This is a major breakthrough for me, because Kathy is one of those people. I mean, she's worked with extraordinary people over the years, and she's a branding whiz and puts people together and brands things. But she has this way about her that is, she's so at ease with herself. And I went to a couple of years ago, I think it was actually last year's Grammys, I went to the Clive Davis party with her, because a mutual friend of ours produces it. The extraordinary Jennifer Hellman, another woman. Isn't this amazing? It's like I could just name them one after another, after another, after another, who are doing such stressful jobs, and they're acing it because, as women, and I'll get back to Kathy in a second, you know, we've all, I think women are overachievers because they have to be, because they've been like minimized and marginalized and undermined for so long. And I know growing up, and I don't know what it's like today to be a young woman today, but I do know that when I was growing up, I knew I had to be not just good, but better than everyone else around me. I had to work harder. I had to do more. I had to stay up. You know, I had to put in more hours at everything, because if I wanted to be respected, and that's what I wanted to lead in, then I really had to be great at what I did in every possible way. And I think women are the ultimate overachievers for that. I mean, it's kind of like a whole, you know, it's like a coven of A personalities running around doing incredible thing and maybe not getting the appreciation they should get for it or the acknowledgement. But if you see women running companies, if you see women doing these jobs, these very, very stressful, high-powered jobs, it's an extraordinary thing to behold. So, when I met Kathy and we went to this party together, and I was struck by just how incredibly together she was. It was very funny because she knew one half of the room at the Clive Davis party, all the business guys, and I knew all the musicians and the artists. So between the two of us, we were the power couple. We could have been a fabulous lesbian couple, but we weren't, sadly. And so we started talking, and I said, "You seem you're incredibly. Have you always been this way? Have you always found it so? You know, have you always been so self-assured?" And she said, "Oh yeah, my mother was. My parents were incredible, but my mother definitely always made sure that I knew that I was enough And of course, I almost burst into tears because I was in such agonizing pain to hear this and joy at the same time. You know, on the one hand, sad that I'd never got that, and the other, so relieved that someone had. And she just said, yeah, I had that feeling always that I was enough. And I remember both my parents telling me that I should never like jump through hoops and try and make myself something I wasn't just to please somebody else and to put someone else's, you know, needs before my own. And that if I ever went for a job or if I ever worked for somebody and anything made me feel bad or that it was inappropriate or wrong or that I was being taken for granted, I had to leave. And that was just like, what? That was, I mean, really, that as opposed to what I had always grown up with, which was to feel like I had to make everybody happy. I had to please everybody before myself. Everybody's needs came before my own. That I was a good child and a pleaser. And I think any pleasers listening to this know exactly what I'm talking about. It's just like the desire to please, a hard one to break.
I agree. I mean, what a gift. What a gift her parents, even if it was inadvertent, that they gave her. When you said earlier, you know my gift is to bring the conversation down. And you
know, well, I could see a little my brain worry. I literally felt like I was being too up. I felt like I was saying something that was so positive, and I could see a look of
what?
I actually think I saw the moment that you knew that you could step in and just shit on my dream. Piss. On my sparkle. Off
thank
you,
you so much for the, thank you for the permission. No, I think honestly, I think Kathy Sharp Ross getting that is just amazing. And if other people had that, oh my God, can you imagine what a place this would be? And if you and I had had it, oh my God, we'd be dangerous. It would be incredible. But you were talking earlier about how women are so brilliant at everything because they kind of have to be good at everything. And the reason behind that is because everything's so competitive, you know, that whole patriarchal thing that we're taught. What that kind of leads to, and why are these women that you're rightly, brilliantly praising, why are these not guilty of it? That has made some women anti-women. That feeling of competition, that feeling of, and yeah, the patriarchy caused it, but we have agency now, so we don't have to continue to be horrible to other women. And some women are unpleasant. And I told you, an editor I work with on a huge book magazine was a really sweet editorial assistant, wanted to write. And this was back in the day of just like you'd print stuff out. And she handed out the first thing she'd ever written, printed it out rather, handed it to the editor to get the editor's approval, someone's approval she craved and needed and, you know, wanted. And the editor got a red bar out and just crossed through it and said, this is shit, and handed it back. I'll never forget that because I think that was vicious.
And by the way, I agree 100% that, and let me just say right now that I'm not saying that all women are great at what they do. I'm not saying that all women like shine and run companies and are astonishing. I'm just saying that the women that I meet and the women that I know who excel in what they do are unbelievably driven because they have to be. Then you meet these women who do not play with other children well, who do not want you. I don't know. It makes me sad. It makes me sad because that competitiveness, we want to get away from that. We want to be each other's allies as opposed to each other's, you know. I think it still comes from that same place where we've been told the myth is that there's only so much to go around. You can see where it comes from. And it, after, you know, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds years, for God's sake, of being told that there's only room for one in this area or one here. Or there's only so many men to go. Oh God. You know, it's always the same thing. We have our woman. We have our female on this. Blah, 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 blah. I can't do what I do without my incredible band, without the people around me, without the men that I work with all the time. But I got to tell you that in my experience of like the project that's up in front of me, a very classical project that I have that I've been working on for 10 years now, and it's coming to the point where it will be out there. It is absolutely, it's about women, and it's like, you know, it's written by, of course, me, and it's produced by me and another woman, engineered by Olga Fitzroy. It's the because it's highly classical. Susie Winkworth is the arranger of the orchestra. The orchestra was entirely female. I think there were four men that played in it, and that was it. But for me, it's not because I was looking for excuse to, but because I knew that it was important that I got. I mean, they're all great players. They're the most amazing people at their job. Olga Fitzroy is like engineers Coldplay, you know, she's at the top of her game. And I've had long relationships with these women, and they are the best for me at what they do. So absolutely, they are the people doing this. And this is a very female-centric project and piece. And so to me, it absolutely behooves that this would be a very female-driven project. And I delight in this. It makes me very happy to see this.
I love what you said about the women. It was Dorothy Dandridge, wasn't it? I was just thinking, who was it that Halle Berry was saying we need to look back and thank? And it was Dorothy Dandridge.
Yeah, it was Dorothy Dandridge.
Action singer.
Absolutely.
You were saying that the women that you're talking about now, the ones that the unapologetic women that inspire you now, as opposed to our brilliant women in the album, but the ones now, yeah, they've all mastered this, that we don't have to be competitive. And I was called a misogynist by someone, a woman, for writing about not having children, because I was talking about the mother's experience, the non-mother's experience, and how that's kind of pitted against the mother's experience, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And it kind of blew my mind. So I feel loath when I'm talking about these women to kind of accuse anyone of misogyny, because I don't think that's kind of, I don't think that's consciously what's happening. But there is some misogyny at play. I'm sorry, there is.
A woman called you a misogynist?
Yeah. She
did she mean a wisogynist? No. That's my new
what's
word.
That mean?
You're a wisogynist. I mean, just a woman. A misogynist is a man, a wisogynist. No, now I just made it up. I just made it up. That's ridiculous.
Sorry.
I know what you wrote, and I know the article that you wrote. It's called, darling, it's called Having a Sense of Humor.
Well, also, it's called just having balance. I mean, she accused me of not allowing women their experience. And I said to her, she said, there's a word for that. And I said, well, what's the word for someone that doesn't allow every woman their experience? And that was the point I was trying to make. But anyway, I digress, just because I think, you know, I don't want to, I know neither of us are kind of slagging on women at all. It's just there are some women that have mastered this, and these are the fabulous women that you're talking about now. And I know one of them, and I know you got a bit of a crush on her, and it kind of hurts my feelings a little bit, but I will accept it. Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift is great. I mean, she's a young woman who's let's see what happens with the giant football player, shall we? But you know, my feeling about that is if they break up, she's got another two albums that are going to go absolutely ballistic. All right, which is what we love about her. I think she's a great role model for young women. She's smart, she's creative, she's talented, she's generous. She's got her head screwed on properly. She's obviously got a great mother who travels with her and goes with her many, many places, which is the best sign ever. She's not a stage mom. She's like a, she seems to me to be like, I don't know, but something's right about that, about Taylor Swift. Something is right about her. And I personally, and I don't have children, I have Labradors. It's a very different thing. But if I had girls, I think I'd rather them I'd rather them see Taylor Swift and see her achievement and her, you know, literally taking over the world. It's wonderful. It's wonderful to see. And it is a beacon. It is a beacon for all young women to know that, you know, Taylor Swift is a good looking gal. Yes, it's the truth, but she's bloody talented and she works hard and she's great at what she does. And that's why she is where she is. She's had the breaks. She has a great team. She has all those things. It's been the perfect storm, yes. But ultimately, better. I think she's the better role model out there, the best right now. And, you know, that doesn't mean musically she's great at what she does. I mean, there's plenty of unbelievably talented people out there. But I'm a fan of that. Yeah, I am. I'm a bigger fan of that than, you know, basically be pole dancing, stripping down to nothing. I mean, it's all, you know, pop music is sex and sex will always be pop music and it'll always be fashion and sex and pop. It's always going to be wrapped around each other. I get it. And I'm not trying to be a prude or anything, but I do like to see women lead with their talent. I love it. I love to see that. And I like Billie Eilish hugely, yeah, by the way, as well.
Yeah. I just did something so awful, dear listener, while Judith was saying something, because I watched a film last night, and I wonder if you've seen it. I think it was 2019, so it's not a new one. it blew my mind. And there was a line in it, Judith, that I'm going to say to you, and it made me cry, and I wonder if it would do the same. So it's Juliette Binoche, who is incredible. And the film is Who You Think I Am. And she's a 50-year-old woman who, I won't spoil too much, but ends up being online with a much younger man. And it's really fascinating. She's extraordinarily incredible in it. And there's a line she says to her therapist, "You're never too old to be little."
Oh my God. And that's exactly what you're saying about all of this. If everyone gets what Kathy Sharp Ross has, which is that looking after, then that nurturing, that support, being treated when they're little, even as an adult, beautifully and with kindness and knowing your sense of worth, the rest of it follows and you become these unapologetic, brilliant women. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it all starts with what, and that's the Kathy Sharp Ross example. It all begins with, unless you're incredibly lucky and you've come in astoundingly and so self-assured, I'm not sure that does happen because it's so much nature and nurture. But if you don't have people around you, your parents, obviously, who instill that in you, then you have a much harder road ahead. I'm not talking about helicopter parents who say, "Darling, you're brilliant at everything. You're amazing. You're incredible. Look at you." I'm talking about the parents who just say what her parents said to her, her mother said to her, which is, "You're enough. Don't have to turn yourself inside out to please anyone. You have to feel good about the way you're treated and what people ask of you. You have to put your needs first. And you have to know that you are absolutely, you know, you are worthy and worth joy and success and all those things. And you have to work hard and you have to really, really put the work in. And nothing comes from nothing and you're not owed anything. You are a substantial, wonderful person." And that, I believe, I didn't get that. You didn't get that. I would say the vast majority of people did not get that. Because being told that you're the greatest thing since sliced bread and that you will be president or, you know, go to the moon, etc. That's not healthy either. That's not, there's so many kids right now who are like teetering on the edge of the abyss because they were brought up to believe that they could do anything, be anything, were stars, were brilliant, were just like extraordinary, were amazing at everything. They weren't. They're just children. And then, you know, as you grow, you learn to find out what your skills are and what your passions are. And the role of the parent, I guess, is to get out of the way and just allow a child to develop and to instill them with a sense of self and safety and the kind of confidence that is a healthy confidence. Like I said, to know that you're enough and that your needs are important and to express them. It's paramount to be able to express yourself and say how you feel, what you need, what is hurting you, what is worrying you, what is troubling you, what you'd like to be, what you'd like to do, how. And then, because when you do that, you know, that old saying about, you know, you can't love until you love yourself, you know, and everybody kind of goes, ugh. But the truth is, you can't. And you know, if you never feel satiated, filled up enough, then you can't actually give that well. You can't. I mean, you can please to the end of time, but that's an empty feeling to please and please and please and please and please. It's sort of like to be filled. It's that analogy yet again of being able to put on the oxygen mask on the plane so that then you can put it on the other person next to you or to the child next to you. I had this great therapist once who, when I was scared stiff, you'll see that this is connected. When I was terrified of flying, and I used to be terrified of flying, I have an anxiety disorder, you know, and I have clinical depression and an anxiety disorder, which I know many people relate to. And of course, it would set me off. It would trigger me and I would be just a mess. And this wonderful therapist said, "When you're flying, put your hand on your heart, put it on your chest, talk to yourself, talk to her as if she was your child." Now, this relates to what you were talking about the little, you're never, you know, the littleness. And she said, talk to her, the young you, the little you, imagine yourself as like 5 years old and talk to her like you're her mother, like you're her parent, you're strong, you're going to take care of her. And basically say, you stay inside, you stay in there until it's safe to come out. I'm taking care of I know this sounds ridiculous, but it makes so much sense. I'm taking care of this. I'm going to protect you. You're going to be okay. It's just rough air. It's going to be all right. But you stay inside where it's safe. I'll tell you when to come out. I mean, honest to goodness. And I've actually said that. I was like, oh, grief. You know, because I'm rolling my eyes. I did it. I could have cried on the plane because it was extraordinary. It's extraordinary because we are all, you know, people talk about when you're old people always feel incredibly young, you know, as in that young person is still in there because our lives are very short comparatively, you know, they pass very, very quickly. And that sense of who you were when you were little, you're always that person inside. They're in there. You are in there. She's in there. And that is the point, I think, which we don't do enough and we should do more, which is to be a parent to our own parents, a parent to our own child, particularly if you haven't had parents who could do that job. I couldn't. I didn't. I think as a mother, which I've never been to an actual child, but I have been trying to be mother to myself. I've been trying to be that mother to the child who didn't get the confidence and the safety and the sense of self-assuredness of being enough. I mean, I think that ultimately is the end game. And it's hard to do, but it is the answer.
I love that again as well that you, because you know I'm going to pull off on this, that you use the term as a mother correctly. Because you can mother yourself without having to have been a mother. You have that empathy and that love inside you and that compassion that often people that don't have children are told they don't have. I'm going to ask you, you have the opportunity now to name the most impressive, unapologetic woman now to you. You can say my name, you don't have to.
I choose not to.
Okay.
But no, yeah. Listen, you are phenomenal.
Stop.
I know that's what you want. Okay. So let's just get that one done. Okay. You're a joy, quite frankly. I've loved you since the day I met you. But I would say, I will say that I think Mary Howell is the woman that impresses me the most. And I'm surrounded, like I said, by a plethora, you know, like I said, Liz Ellis, the Alexa Pulitzers, who was an incredible designer of so many beautiful Italianate paperwork and gorgeous prints and beautiful bags and all sorts of amazing things. She's like bespoke, beautiful, incredible. Dawn Dado, one of the greatest artists I know, who everything about her is living art. It's extraordinary. It just amazes me. I think Mary Howell gets the most impressive woman that I know because, like I said, her demeanor, again, her grace. She's full. She's filled up. That's what I see, is somebody who has reservoirs that I've never had. Reservoirs of self-assuredness and of feeling enough so that she can then go out and make her life's work about helping others. You know, when you're not full up and when you don't feel like you're enough, then you spend most of your life trying to feel filled up so that I'm seen. And being seen is another word for asking for my needs to be met. You know, it's the same thing. It's so many of us, we want to be seen. We want to be acknowledged. It's such a simple thing. And we go to such extremes to get that. I don't know of an artist. I don't know of a performer that doesn't, you know, that doesn't do it for these very, very powerful reasons. That's why we all have imposter syndrome, because the other part of your brain is basically saying, you're rubbish. You're totally rubbish. Now, you know, the flip side, the other side of this sword, of course, would we do what we do? And this is the question. Would we be artists? Would we be these overthinkers? Would we be truth seekers? Would we be the writers of songs that make you cry and feel absolutely like your heart has been touched, like you're able to expose your inner workings? Would there be that level of like pain and humanity in art if it wasn't for the fact so many of us are so beautifully flawed. I'm using that phrase, you know what I mean? Because I don't see any of this as being victimization. I mean, some people have that, yes. But I'm talking about like a simple truth, which is parents do as much as they can do. Human beings can only do what they're capable of doing. But we are the first generations of people who actually question this stuff and don't want it to be the same and feel, like Philip Larkin said, parents, you know, they fuck you up. And every generation, I remember my dad saying that to me and we were screaming with laughter because it's the truth.
It's funny how you say, and you're probably right, that we are the first generation that looks at it. And yeah, the generation that we were talking about, our come on and get it women, had it regardless. Somehow they kind of got there anyway.
The one thing that I would point out is that with the come on and get it women, with these role models and these fucking trailblazers, I would probably say that their private lives, their personal lives were not joyful in the way that their lives on stage and their musical lives were, because that's where they got to be in charge, in control, their full selves. But being the times they were in and being the fact that they wanted to be those women in control, their private lives were not so much fun. Absolutely not. And I think that's another thing that is important to say, which is in this life, you don't get everything. Life is, you know, relationships, life is about, it's an awful lot about compromises that will never go away. It can't. Because you can't, you know, when you're talking about being a misogynist or, you know, allowing women to just like, you know, appreciate for everything that they do or don't do. And my belief has always been that you don't get everything. You just juggle and it's a bit of compromise and you do the best you can. But I don't believe you get everything, you know, by me being this, you know, I chose to want to live on the road and to be an artist. And that is my choice. It means for me, I didn't want to have children because I didn't want to be that parent. I didn't want to be an absentee parent. I didn't want it, and that's what I mean. So you make these choices, and it's okay. It's all okay.
It's all okay. I'll tell you what's not okay. It's the end of this episode.
Running out of time.
It's the end of this episode.
Oh God!
Quickly tell me.
And I just blew the phone up.
Give me a yes or no. Would you write a song about a breakup? About the person you've broken up with.
Have you ever listened to my music?
Of course I have. I haven't.
I've written so many songs about a breakup. It's ridiculous.
About the person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you?
Oh,
wicked,
yeah. Yeah.
Wicked woman. Hey, that's it for this week. Judith Owen. We'll be back next week with the... we're going to be back next week with the last of the series.
Don't say
Stop
that.
Stop crying. You mustn't miss it. You'll want to hear how our Come On and Get It women are resonating with women, you, today. Honestly, it's beautiful, life-affirming stuff. Huge thanks to you for listening and to you, lovely Judy. Thanks, Juju, for making this oral joy possible. Don't forget to come.
Oral joy.
Yes, you heard it.
Don't
make me spell it. Don't forget to come on and get us next week and to follow and give the series a review. Unapologetically, Judith Owen is produced by Pineapple Audio Production. We'll see you next time. Come on.